everybody, and welcome back to the Fenway Rundown, Mass Lives Red Sox podcast. I'm your host, Chris Cotillo, joined once again by my co-beat writer at Mass Live, Chris Smith. And we have a lot to talk about. This is our first pod since the beginning of the season. The Red Sox are a week in, 4-3 record as we sit here on a Friday off day. And what a week it has been. Three losses to the Orioles over the weekend at Fenway. And then they come back against all odds and they sweep the Rays. As Alex Cora said about 15 times, the defending American League champion Rays.
Well, that's only because Johnny like fed it to him like 50 times.
That's true.
Go on.
and then they come out. Eduardo Rodriguez makes his triumphant return yesterday, and they beat the Orioles to win that first game of the series. Today's an off day. They sit here with a 4-game win streak. They sit here with a 4-3 record. And I think they sit here with more hope, a lot more hope than definitely Sunday afternoon, but even more hope than we had a week ago at the beginning of the season. And I'll start with your take that you texted me in the middle of the game yesterday. Said that this team is actually, I don't know how you phrased it, but really good or pretty good.
No, I didn't say really. I think this team's good. Good. Is there good? I mean, I had them what down in your preview for in your column for 85 wins, but yeah. I had said on that podcast, I don't know if it was yours or another one. I've done a couple of these with other people, you know, but
yeah. Well, that's good for the brand.
You know, I said it wouldn't surprise me if they were just like, you know, and everybody has been using the term sneaky good, but if you know, they're sneaky good. I didn't put it in those terms, but they're sneaky good and they come away with, you know, 90 wins. I think they're going to be challenging for one of the wild card spots the whole year. You know, they're going to be in that in contention for it. I think that one thing that we saw that, you know, we've talked about over and over on this podcast and, you know, everywhere that Heim Bloom really added to the depth of the roster. It's a way deeper roster than it was last year. You know, as we said a million times, Ryan Weber was the number three starter last year. Now he's not even on the 40-man roster. You look at how that came into effect over the first six games of the season. They've only gotten one bad start. After the first six games of the 2020 season, how many bad starts do they have? Five?
Five, yeah.
I mean, you know, Evaldi, I think, pitched pretty well in the opener that year. But, you know, so it's, you know, it's interesting. Oh, we're going to see how Garrett Richards throws. What is he throwing Saturday?
Saturday night, yep.
He's the only one that had a bad start in that. And then you see other guys like, you know, Whitlock, who's, you know, emerged as a Rule 5 guy. And I think
he's one of the guys we're going to talk about. But, you know, that was the starting rotation is where I wanted to start, because that is where I've always said, like, this is where this team, you know, this team's potential starts and ends with this group. And you're right. Evaldi was great. You know, Rodriguez got the win. He wasn't as sharp as he has been at times in his career, but for what it was, his first start in, you know, 575 days or whatever, they'll definitely take it. And it was about more than just his performance, obviously, yesterday in Baltimore. Pivetta was really good. Perez kept him in the game and as his job to do. And Richards was the one guy that struggled. Tanner Houck was really good in his outing. And so, you know, it just shows you that you've seen, you know, these guys, even with Rodriguez starting the year on the injured list and Chris Sale not part of this group, like, all right, maybe they're all right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and it's interesting when you say Chris Sale's name, because that's like, you know, if they do get him back and they have this rotation that they have, you know, that's a huge addition near, you know, potentially near the trade deadline. However, he's only throwing 125 feet, as Cora told you the other day. And so
be later we'll see. The trade deadline, I'd guess.
Yes. So I'm not as optimistic about Chris Sale, you know, and his coming back, you know, by August 1st or whatever. But the rest of the rotation looks good. Perez is that type of guy that, you know, he's a number five guy that, you know, he's going to battle and he's going to, you know, he's going to keep you in games. And so I really like the rotation. You know, it's just kind of going forward, staying healthy. And, you know, there's obviously those question marks with, you know, Evaldi and his ability to stay healthy, and Richards hasn't pitched more than, you know, 70 innings or something in the past 4 or 5 years. So, you know, even though he's healthy, and he should be healthy, you know, there are durability concerns. And, you know, and so that, you know, and then Erod, I mean, you know, he had the dead arm to begin the year. So there are, but, you know, but you look at it and they do have that depth. You know, they have Hauk, who had, another great start, 4 starts in a row to start the season, 3 last year, 1 this year. Now he's at the alternate site as their top starting depth option if Evaldi, you know, were to get hurt or something would happen. Mm-hmm. You got Andrees. Is it Andreese or Andrees?
It's Andrees, but a lot of people have been saying it a lot of different ways. Yeah.
So yeah,
Matt Andrees. Want to read about Matt Andrees, a big feature on him and his brother, the emergency room nurse, is my Friday notes column today, but continue after the shameless plug.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, I don't know if they're going to let Whitlock, you know, do some spot starts this year, but I mean, they should. You know, he looks like a guy that potentially could be in their rotation in 2021 and beyond is a really, you know, impressive, guy. So, and then, you know, you look at, as a, you know, Connor Siebold's too in the minor leagues and, you know, mm-hmm. has potential to help out the rotation if some of these guys, so you have some different guys to plug in there if you have an injury or two down the road.
I think the big story, other than, you know, rattling off 4 wins, there's been a lot of big stories, actually, rattling off 4 wins, Eduardo Rodriguez coming back. But I think the one that's really captivating, at least Red Sox Twitter, and the thing that Red Sox fans are really pissed about is that Tanner Houck decision. He comes up, and that's kind of the question that I asked Cora the other day. I said, you know, what do you tell somebody who has checked every box in his 4 major league starts? He's, you know, he won the first 3, pitched well the other day in a loss against Baltimore. You know, he looks nasty on the mound. He looks like at times their best starter. What do you tell a guy when you're sending him down? Like, what more could he have done? And Alex, he didn't get into the specifics too much, but he said, you know, it depends on what you mean by checking all the boxes. In our mind, he hasn't, as we've talked about a lot in the past. You know, his splitter is a pitch that he needs to keep working on, the attack plan against lefties, but it seems like there's even more. And the Red Sox just feel like at this time, the 5 guys they have in the rotation above him are better options. And so I understand, you know, people getting upset about Houck being so good in his first few starts and getting sent down. It's not something that he necessarily deserves, you know, to put it that way. But who are you going to send out? And I think people think the answer to that question is Garrett Richards. I would say that if you guarantee a guy $10 million, give him more than 2 innings to see if he can prove himself. But, you know, it really would be, if you think about it, if all these are guaranteed in the rotation, Rodriguez is guaranteed in the rotation. You just signed Perez and Richards to guaranteed deals, and they want to see what they have in Pivetta, who's out of options before Houck comes up. So
no starting pitcher would ever sign with, you know, the Red Sox again, if they took Garrett Richards out of the rotation after, you know, 2 innings.
Yes. I mean, it's even to think that he's going to be out of the rotation by the end of April is a stretch. I mean, if he does that 5 times, I mean, maybe he's in the bullpen, but you know, these guys, he's an established major league starter. I know there's question marks. I know there's red flags. I know there's an injury history, but I think a little bit more patience on the Garrett Richards front would be good. I know that's hard when Tanner Houck pitched as well as he could, but what do you think, you know, beyond the obvious, the splitter, the attack plan against lefties, why do you think he's in Worcester right now?
Yeah, so I think that is the obvious, but I think that there, you know, you can go beyond that too. I mean, look at Houck is a guy that pitched out of the bullpen in Pawtucket for much of the second half of the 2019 season because the Red Sox
they converted him and Darwinson, right?
Yeah, and the Red Sox were looking at him as like, okay, that, you know, he could potentially help out the 2019 Red Sox bullpen. It never happened. But his inning count wasn't huge in 2019. Last year, he makes some starts at the alternate training site. He makes 3 starts, you know, in Boston. But, you know, I mean, how many innings did he pitch last year? And they talk about, like, at the alternate site, it's not really as high stress, like, major league innings, you know?
Right.
And And so maybe he pitched like 50 innings combined last year. So you're asking a guy that, you know, pitched half of that 2019 out of the bullpen, or
so number 119 in 2018, 107 and two thirds in 2019. And then obviously 17 innings in the majors last year. So he's never gone past 120.
So are they expecting him, like the people that say, oh, he should be in the rotation and start every 5 days? Well, great. But then if he keeps doing what he's doing right now, and he's going, you know, 5, 6, 7 innings every start, and throwing 94 or whatever he was throwing the other day, they're going to shut him down in August because his inning count is going to be too high.
Right.
That's right there is something I think a lot of people are missing.
Yeah. And besides, they have the luxury because they have the depth pieces, you know, it is tough. I do understand that, you know, performance when a guy looks that good consistently, and it's not a one start fluke. It's now four times that he's done it. But with the way the rotation set up, to me, it said a lot that they didn't even consider him for the opening day rotation during spring training. Like from the beginning, it was like we thought it would be Houck versus Pivetta for the fifth, and it was just, well, Nick's pretty much in the rotation and Houck's going to be in the minors, and that's how it always looked.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Pivetta is a guy that's got oodles of, you know, potential, and he showed the potential in two starts with the Red Sox last year, and, you know, and he showed again the first start of this year. You know, like he throws hard. And when he doesn't command the fastball, he's still, you know, he's still able to get guys out. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, he's got, everybody talks about the spin on his curveball, but his slider, he threw his slider a ton. And that's been something that they've wanted him to do. And he's wanted to do is throw the slider a little bit more. And so, I mean, I think that, and I think that when I say like Houck, you know, if he's on a 5 day rotation and, you know, he pitches six innings every time, and he's at, you know, so many innings, I'm not saying he's going to get hurt in August, and that's why they would shut him down. They're going to shut him down because they don't want him to go over that. They wouldn't want him to go over so many innings that he had in the previous seasons, you know, there has to be a limit there to his inning count, because he is he's a young guy that's obviously showed a lot of potential, and he's a guy that they're going to protect.
Yeah. And that, you know, 24, almost 25. He's a guy that is a big part of the future of the team and the rotation. Move on to a couple other guys. You know, I think it would be harder to start out the season hotter than JD Martinez and Christian Vasquez have. You know, Vasquez, a little bit surprising to me just because he missed the last week of spring training after getting hit in the eye. But I think the real big story is JD Martinez. I mean, what he's been able to do, I know it might be playing into a lazy narrative a little bit, but that chip on his shoulder, wanting to come back and show people what he can do. I mean, he's 13 for 30, 7 doubles, 2 homers. His OPS is, both him and Vasquez, their OPS are over 1,300 at this point. But just to see what JD has been able to do, I know it's a small sample size. I know it's a week, but either we all really, really, really undervalued the in-game video, or he's back in a big way.
I think it's both. I think the in-game video helps. You know, he can make an adjustment. If he sees something, he can go down and look at his swing. You know, he can see and then adjust it for the second bat instead of doing the same, you know, the same thing he did wrong, you know, the first at bat in the second, third, and fourth at bat, and then have to fix it the next day. And then maybe something happens in the first at bat the next day and he doesn't know. And after he made that adjustment. So I think it has to do with the video somewhat, obviously, but I think that, you know, he admitted it. He wasn't prepared for last season to start. He only began training, hitting in the cage like, you know, a month before. So he took like 2 months, 2.5 months off during the pandemic. And, didn't hit. And so I think there's a combination of factors. His season right now is reminding me a little like the start of it. I'm not saying that he's going to have as good a season as you know, David Ortiz had in 2016, his final year. But like David Ortiz led the league in doubles, like his final year as a 40-year-old or whatever he was, 40, 41. And it was like, no one thought he could do that. Well, no one really thinks JD Martinez can do it after his small sample size of 2 months where he wasn't good last year. And he's come out and had like a double in every game or something. Yeah,
extra, ridiculous. One of like five or six guys ever to have an extra base hit in seven straight games to start the year, I think.
And he's a guy that, is a guy that can be affected too in the early going in terms of power because, you know, of the cold weather and everything we saw doing in his 2018 season, which was really good. You look at a lot of his numbers in April that month, I think he hit for a good average. He hit for a good OBP or he had a good OBP, but his slugging definitely wasn't as where it was the rest of the season in April. So, you know, I look at him as like, you know, this is really positive that he's, you know, hitting the ball for some power here at the beginning of the year in the cold. And, you know, I mean, we could see a big year for him.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's been super impressive. Vasquez, again, also on a tear, really clutch homer the other night, getting multiple hits a day. So that's encouraging. And you know, even a couple of the guys that have been struggling. Devers is still hitting under 200. So is Kike Hernandez, but they both homered yesterday. Bogarts has been fine. A couple guys I did want to talk about. Bobby Dalbec, this has not been a good start after the crazy spring he had. I know he got hurt. I know he had a little finger injury there at the end of camp, but so far, looking at the line on Dalbec, he is 2-for-18 with 7 strikeouts, 1 walk. He kind of looks lost at the plate at times. And then another guy that I think is really flying under the radar that's been impressive to me on both sides of the ball. There's been a lot of storylines, so this guy has not been talked about. Franchi Cordero in his first few games as a member of the Red Sox already has a couple doubles. He's hitting .313 early on.
Wall. Does he have 5 hits in like 16 at bats?
5-for-16. Yep.
And look at, I just did that off the top of my head.
Good guess. Are you looking at it?
No, I was not looking at it. The only reason I know that is because I was looking at, you know, former Red Sox stats today, and I looked at Andrew Benintendi, and I was like, oh, he's 5-for-25. I was like, Franchi Cordero has to have at least 5 or more hits. And so I looked at it, and yeah, I just remember the 16. And so, he's been really good. I've been really impressed by him defensively too. He's a guy that, that they talked a lot about in spring training is, you know, the importance of staying healthy. And, you know, they set down a plan and everything on how to keep him healthy with the training staff and he went over it. So, and in terms of Dalbec, you know, struggling at the beginning of the year here, he just needs to, you know, he just needs to slow it down and calm it down and, you know, just have fun. He's a good hitter. I've said it many times about Dalbec.
That'll be the promo card for this episode. Bobby Dalbec is a good hitter, says Chris Smith.
Well, he's a better hitter than me.
That's true.
But
not,
anyway.
Actually, not so far this season, but in historically, yes.
Yeah. So I look at him as a guy that, you know, a lot of people look at his strikeouts and they're high and everything, but I followed this guy throughout, you know, the minors, and the strikeout rates have gone down, not only from, you know, single A to double A to triple A, but, you know, during the year. And so he's a guy that has the ability to control the strike zone. I wouldn't, even though he strikes out a lot, he has a good eye for the strike zone. And so I wouldn't say that, you know, this is anything to be super concerned about. I'm sure that it didn't help that he didn't play a few games at the end of there in just spring training because of the finger injury. Mm-hmm. And he's another guy that could be affected by the cold here. You know, I hate to blame it on the cold, but have you ever hit in the cold?
No, I can't even write in the cold with the press box windows open.
I would way rather pitch in the cold. Like cold is, you know, it benefits the pitchers a lot more than the hitters. And that's another reason, like with Devers, you know, I said to my wife the other day, she's like, wow, Devers is off to a really bad start. And I said, well, he likes to hit in warmer weather. And then he goes to Baltimore and he hits a home run. And what was it?
Like 70 degrees there.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think there is something that there is something to be said about hitting in the cold weather. Plus some of those balls died big time, you know, like Bobby Dalbec hit one that could have probably gone out.
The entirety of the Nesson crew in Watertown thought it was going to hit their building.
So. That was a long. That was a long shot. If you just watched it on Nessun.
Yeah, 550. but no, I mean, you know, talking about Devers, yesterday was encouraging. The last couple of days have been encouraging. So it seems like he's on the verge of breaking out. But this, it goes to show you. I mean, these obviously the bats were quiet the first 3 days, but the last few days, you know, some guys, a lot of guys still under 200, and they've been able to, you know, have a couple big offensive games against Tampa there. And win four in a row. So that tells you a lot about kind of the depth of the lineup. The bullpen to me has always been maybe an underrated piece of this team. Josh Taylor looks really bad. I know he's a guy that you've really liked in the past, but to me, there are some warning signs there. I know Darwinson's really struggled with control. I think he has like four walks in two innings, which is nothing new, but still a little bit scary there. But generally, you take away those two guys, what you've seen, very encouraging from the bullpen, and that starts and ends with Matt Barnes. Yesterday, almost an immaculate inning, four scoreless innings, four hitless innings, nine strikeouts in that time. I think only one base runner. He's just been lights out. I think his velocity's up. Alex Cora talked about that yesterday. I was actually on the Ottavino for closer train for all of spring training and thought, you know, for I always, and I've said on here, if you thought Matt Barnes was good enough to be your closer, you would have said that at the beginning of camp. Why do you need to see what Ottavino could do? But now the way he's throwing the ball, he looks better than at any time I can remember since I've been covering the team. And that's a good sign too.
Yeah. You know, I think that it's correct. I've never seen Barnes look this good. However,
like
this
dominant, you know, like he's flashed dominant. It. He's flashed it, but never like this.
However, yes. So I have seen flashes, and there have been, you know, hiccups after those flashes. And so I think that, you know, it's his free agency year too. He wants to get paid, right?
Yeah. He saw what happened to Brandon Workman. He cost himself about $50 million with a bad 2020.
Yeah. So this is a guy that has all the incentive in the world to pitch well this year because he's going to make a lot of money if he does. And, you know, as I've said many a times, the ERA is a lot worse in the second half in his career than it is the first half. So what they have to do is really not over pitch him. You know, I mean, they've got to really be careful with him. But he's looked awesome. Whitlock's another guy, and I said yeah, it. Right.
You've been teasing the Garrett Whitlock part of the program four times, so we'll get into it now. That Whitlock mania has taken over in New England.
Well, when we first talked to Gus Quattlebaum after they picked him up in the Rule 5 draft, drafted him in the Rule 5 draft, Gus was like, you know, the thing with him is that he, you know, he induces a lot of ground balls. His sinker's really good. And we think that, you know, is what Gus said, we think that, you know, if we put the, if we shift the right way, that he can be very effective. Well, yeah, I think if they don't shift the right way, they could be. I don't think they thought they were going to have this kind of pitcher.
they can shift whoever they want if he's striking guys out like this.
Yeah, exactly. So you look at him, and it's like, it sounded even in that spot where you know, a guy that you can get a ground ball if you need it. They were looking at it, they were thinking like, you know, maybe like if he possibly could do a high leverage spot with a, you know, a ground ball here and there if we need it. Right now, he should be legit in the mix for, you know, give him two innings like he did on Thursday. You know, yeah, two Thursday. Innings, bridge the gap right to, you know, Matt Barnes and Adam Ottavino, the later guys. And, you know, I mean, he deserves that role. He shouldn't be pitching in, you know, 10-0 games like he did the first time.
And you talk about with Hauk, just an innings limit. I mean, they're going to be even more careful with this guy. You know, it's still, you know, obviously he's looked amazing, and he didn't give up a run in spring training. He was excellent then. He's been excellent so far. He's been really kind of exceeded their expectations, but still, this is a guy coming off Tommy John surgery, a guy who wasn't even at an alternate site last year. He was still rehabbing. And before that, you go back to thinking of just his 2019, he was at AA and he had 70 innings. The year before, he had 120. So, you know, he's already at 5 1/3 through his first two outings here in the first week. Remember that he's thrown 70 innings since the end of the 2018 season. So I think they're going to be careful. They're going to be cautious. Obviously, he has to be on the roster all year because it looks like there's no way they want to lose this guy, obviously. But it's still, you know, very as careful as they possibly can be, I think.
Yeah, and so that's why I question, and I actually asked Dave Bush this, you know, like, is there a possibility that he's one of the depth stars? You know, is he you know, a guy that they would go to if somebody gets hurt? And that's still up in the air, I think, for them. I think that, you know, because of that innings, they're definitely having innings cap on him, and you know, they don't want to overwork him. So while they're going to give him some multiple inning games, obviously that's going to be his type of role, like that two inning stint thing he had. Mm-hmm. First game, what was it, like three and a third or something?
Yeah. And, but that was just to get your feet wet, mop up duty.
Exactly.
Major league debut.
Exactly. So I think that, you know, that's more of what they want to do with him at the most than to, you know, give him 5-6 and a start. I just don't feel like they're going to do it this year. That they haven't talked about it. I mean, they haven't talked to us like that's an idea that they really have. So, yeah.
I mean, I like Garrett Whitlock as much as anybody. Friend of the program. Encourage anybody to check out the previous episode. Much better than any time we've had Smith on. But exactly. I do still want to caution that all 5 1/3 of these innings have come against the Orioles. That is the only devil's advocate thing that we could say.
Yes, but I mean, look at the Orioles are the team that beat them 3 times to begin the
year.
That's
true.
And you know, you can say that, but the velocities looked really good.
I think he's been on Pitching Ninja a few times. He might be the first Rule 5 pick ever to be on the Pitching Ninja account.
And I didn't know this until I watched Nesson the other day. I completely forgot this. Lenny Donato was a Rule 5 guy that the Red Sox had. And Lenny Donato was like, yeah, this guy is way better Rule 5 draft guy than I was. but you know, the changeup is something that, and I think Bradford wrote about it, so give him credit.
Pass.
You know, yeah. He went to Matt Andrews and talked to Matt Andrews about the changeup, and, you know, Matt Andrews really showed him how to throw the changeup. And Bloom's, you know, said to me the other day, he was like, you know, this wasn't something that the Red Sox expected, you know, was that he'd have this good of a changeup. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's been a pitch that has come out of really like nowhere to become a plus pitch since he's been in the Red Sox organization with the help of Manny Drews. So, yeah, I mean, that's interesting right there. So, and it shows you that, you know, he should be able to do it against better competition.
Right. No, I agree with you.
It's, and he's got the personality, right, to do it. Like, yeah. It's not like he's a nervous guy, and he's
about as low key as it gets in a good way. We'll wrap up with this. It's a general question, but the question is, what have you learned about the Red Sox in the first week of the season? I have a few things that I'm going to say first. Number one, I do believe in this rotation. I've been saying all along there's potential. You know, obviously, you know, things, it's going to get early or going to get late quick, whatever the phrase is for Garrett Richards with Tanner Houck. I do think that, you know, he has to show something, at least in the first few starts. And to me, a big takeaway about this team that I knew it all along and I knew it was going to happen. It's just weird seeing it in the lineup every day. Is that Marwin Gonzalez is playing a lot of innings. Like, he's an everyday player, which at every different position, which I know is the role and I get it, but you know, at some point, if he doesn't produce, that's going to be a glaring hole in the lineup, in my opinion. So that's just two kind of random takes there. Interested to see what your big takeaways have been.
Yeah. I think that the thing that I would do if I was Cora was, you know, get Kike out of the top spot. I think that the lineup would look really good with Verdugo, who's looked good to start the year, you know, getting some extra base hits. I think he should be the number one hitter, followed by, you know, either Bogarts or Devers. I know that he likes to hit Bogarts after JD. So, you know, throw it Devers, you know, Devers, JD, and then Bogarts. And I would put Vasquez fifth. You know, it's funny that they talk about, like, last year, oh, he wasn't as good in 2020 as he was in 2019, Vasquez. Well, he actually had a higher OPS last year.
Right. Barely.
Those 2 months. Barely. It was like 2 points, but still.
Yeah. Count.
So, I mean, you know, you look at, everybody was impressed by that 2019 year, and, you know, he matched it last year in the small sample size that they had. And so, I look at it as, I'm like, I was thinking about it today, and I was like, if you look at it, Kike in the top spot is like asking Brock Holt to be in the top spot, like in the 2017, 2018 Red Sox, right? He's a good hitter and he's just, you know, he can play all these positions. He's just, it just doesn't work, I don't think. And so, you know, I think that that's something that they'll change. And I think that their offense can be really good, you know, if they just make that adjustment. I'm not saying that I don't like Kike as a player. I think he's been great in the outfield defensively. I think he can hit. I just don't think he's a leadoff hitter. And so I would make that adjustment. As you said, the starting rotation has been really impressive so far. And that's, you know, one of my biggest takeaways. And I think that the bullpen's very underrated, as you said as well. You know, I think there's a lot of good arms. And, you know, the important thing is getting Darnes and Hernandez, too, and Josh Taylor on track.
The Red Sox coming out of the gate, screwing up the leadoff hitter versus number two hitter thing is now going to be a time-honored tradition. Because if they do make that switch, which you think they're going to, it is going to be the third straight year that has happened. Remember, Benintendi switching with Mookie in 2019. Last year, Benintendi again switching with Verdugo, and now you're arguing for it for a third straight year. But I'm with you there. I think it makes some sense.
Well, go ahead. But also, yeah. So, like, the thing now is, and people will say different things. Like, they'll say, okay, put your best hitters at the top. You know, you load them up. Like, put best hitters 1, 2, 3, 4. Some people say, though, now that the best hitter should be number two, the best hitter with power should be number four. So in that instance, maybe Devers, you know, Martinez, but Martinez has looked comfortable in the third spot. He's on a roll. Keep him there. You know, even if he comes up in the first inning with two outs and nobody on, you know, I understand that you don't want him in there at that situation, but he's looked good at third. He's comfortable there. He's comfortable in the third position. But Verdugo isn't the best hitter on the team. He is a very good hitter, but he's not the best hitter on the team. And that's where that second spot, you know, is usually, like, we see Mike Trout in the second spot. And, you know, Aaron Judge, that was a very good hitter, obviously, for the Yankees, was in the second
spot. Another bold
take. And so, oh, yeah, very good hitter, Aaron Judge. But anyway, in hurt or maybe hurt again. But anyway, you know, so I would put, you know, Verdugo to me is more of a one or a three or a five. So I would put him one, and I would, you know, either put Bogarts and, or, you know, Devers, Martinez is one of your best hitters, and Martinez needs to stay at the third spot because he's just been comfortable there. And why mess with anything? So either one of those two, put them in the second spot and then get rolling.
I'll end it with this. This is one absurd stat. I know there's been a few, you know, Marwin starting, being the first guy to ever start four different places, JD with that extra base hit stat. But this stat that I looked up the other day while writing about Christian Vasquez after he said he was feeling sexy at the plate is pretty absurd. And so Christian Vasquez hit 10 homers in his first 291 big league games from 2014 to 2018. 10. He's now hit 32 in his last 191 games since the beginning of 2019. That's pretty absurd.
He's a good defensive catcher. What we thought he was going to be was a great defensive catcher who didn't have enough to hit, you know, and play every day. Now, you know, as Cora said, you know, there's a lot of good Puerto Rican catchers, and, you know, he wants to win a Gold Glove because there's a bunch of Puerto Rican guys that have won Gold Gloves. But there's better defensive catchers than him right now, and there might not be a better offensive catcher than him right now. He might get a Silver Slugger instead of a Silver Slugger before he gets a Gold Glove.
Just what everybody expected on Christian Vasquez there. But so that's Chris Smith. I'm Chris Cotillo. That's our impressions of Week One. But as always, take them with a grain of salt. In the words of Alex Cora and every other person who's ever worked in baseball, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Long way to go. Red Sox back in action over the weekend in Baltimore. They then go to Minnesota and come home for a long homestand. We'll have it all covered for you on MassLive.